Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
I'm funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, mother! Do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Welcome over at Sacky Jacks. I'm Tonali, Mr. Miller. SP futures up, down 25 bucks. As if futures down 64. We had a really solid week on the upside here, and all of a sudden today we're heading the other direction. But, just kind of started yesterday a little bit, but today is, down reasonably heavier. Everything's down. Gold's down. Silver's down. Everything's down. Maddie Weber's value of his car's down. Everything's, the value of your hat's down, man. It's one of those days.
These cars are skyrocketing, I thought.
Sure they are. They're, not only that, you can't get them. Audrey's cousin, I keep trying to get on the air, because it's very interesting how the used car market works and how he's having trouble buying cars. I mean, he has had for a while. He used to have like 30 or 40 cars in his lot. Now he's got like 8. He's had used car people come and buy cars off of his lot and drive them off, put them on their lot, take the offer. It's very difficult to get them, especially pickup trucks or anything. I mean, the new cars are incredibly expensive. I mean, some of this stuff, you can pay if you want a nice pickup truck. You can pay $50,000 for it, maybe more. I mean, there's a Jeep. I know your significant other loves Jeeps. You know, there's a new Jeep out that's $100,000.
I think we're gonna probably stay away from that.
You don't know, she might. She can pay for it cash. She saves her dough. She doesn't blow to the bar like you.
Well, that's true. Speaking of markets, Bob writes in, I remember when Chief and Dr. J used to joke about liar loan mortgages on Stocks and Jocks back in late 2007. I think we are at that point with the stock market valuations right now.
I think he's probably right. I don't know why everything has to go to an extreme, Eddie, but it does. This one though, Lou and I were talking yesterday. Obviously you had your well-deserved day off and we're just talking about some of the stuff, the economic things. It doesn't appear that people, I mean, you would expect that somebody who was an engineer knew the history of bridge building and what worked and what didn't and those kinds of things, and that would be etched in their memory. But I'm stunned at how much these guys are going out on a limb economically here and not realizing what this kind of policy has done before. I mean, I know their attitude is always different this time, but we actually ended the year last year with a 24.9 or 25% increase in the money supply. I mean, that's outstanding. It's twice as much as our worst year in the early 70s. Pretty much more than twice as much any year during World War II. It's just a number that's unconscionable. And you have to go back to if you doubled the amount of money in circulation, did you accomplish anything? And the answer is no. So you wonder what they're doing, and we have the new president in. I listened to him yesterday, and I was, and he's not as bad as listening to the old guy, but I'm somewhat appalled. I really am. Just the money, he must know that the entire mechanism of the government spending money is broken because they're not borrowing to pay to, they're not borrowing to spend money, and they're not taxing to spend money. Not that I want them to tax. They're just printing it and spending it. I mean, I really don't think that, I don't think Caesar or any of those people would have done that. Said, no, you can't, and yet these guys are doing it, and they think it's okay. It has to come down to the fact that you're getting the money to the people you care about, and it's uneven. It has to be that. I don't know what else it could be. If you know that in theory the whole thing is basically sucks. I don't know, but Kevin, how are you? Get me off this topic.
Good. It's Friday.
Yeah,
I'm just always good on Friday.
So Maddie, you want to know why I'm not big on Fauci? Well, today, after listening to him yesterday for 20 minutes, today now he's got a comment he doesn't think the vaccines work against the new mutations. When every one of the companies that's making them says they do, right? But why do we have to keep getting this constant she loves me not stuff out of that guy's office? I don't know if they know that yet. I don't know what the story is. Why does he say it may not? I mean, it either does or it doesn't, or we don't know yet. Does that mean we stop giving vaccine? What does it even mean? I mean, when you lob one out there like that, is it a change in policy? What is it?
Well, let's not rule out the possibility that he just doesn't know what he's doing.
That's possible too. But
the headline says Fauci said the COVID vaccines are powerful enough that they should be able to shoulder new strains of the infection with limited impact on efficacy. That's the headline I'm reading right now from 8 hours ago.
Dr. Fauci says new data shows COVID vaccines appear to be less effective against some new strains. That's the headline on CNBC.
Interesting. So I'll have to read the actual transcript because
it could be that the news is picking up two different ways. That's very possible.
Yeah.
I mean, the news could be full of crap, too.
Or you know, he's saying something in a way that's interpreted two ways. You know, I don't know how you stop that, other than maybe put on...
Well, I think Kevin touched on the greater point, which is you're putting a guy out there that has to address the media every day for some reason, and he doesn't know what's going to happen in the future because no one does. They're making educated guesses right now, and they've been right on some, and they've been wrong on some.
Right, and you know what? Speculating is not helpful. Educated guessing is not helpful.
No, not on something like this. I would agree with Kevin.
I agree. I don't see the point of trumping him out there every single day to basically give his hypothesis on what he thinks might happen.
Plus, he's terrible with questions. People ask him questions.
Well, is it possible that he just likes the limelight?
Very possible.
Very possible, yes.
What if it was Thomas? He'd love it. Dr. J loves it. Maddie, not so much. Just hey, I got this. What is the Guardian? Is that a London thing?
Yeah.
Somebody sent me this article.
Yeah, and I don't know anything about the publication. It pops across my screen sometimes, but I really have paid no attention. I don't know if it's liberal, conservative, tabloid caliber, or something better. I just don't know.
They came out with a... actually, this is not what I wanted to hear, to be honest with you. Public Health England, PHE, study of more than 20,000 healthcare workers found that immunity acquired from an earlier COVID infection provided 83% protection against reinfection for at least 20 weeks. I was kind of hoping for 2 years, not 20 weeks. It's like a half a year.
Not even.
Yeah. The findings show that while people are unlikely to become reinfected soon after their first infection, it is possible to catch the virus again and potentially spread it to others. Overall, I think this is good news, he says. Well, essentially, if you've had it, it's the same as if you had a vaccine. The thing is, if that's true, all the people who had it last March and April should be getting it again, and I don't think they are they?
So that's my knowledge.
So over the five.
But here's the thing: if that's the way it's going to be, then why not focus more on treatment?
Well, here's no here.
Especially as Carl has been good enough to document regularly, and it's not that he's documenting it; it's that he's sharing all the studies that document it. Is that we have effective treatments that happen to be much less, that already exist and happen to be much less expensive than vaccines.
Well, here, no, wait a minute. Okay, I misspoke because they wrote this kind of wrong. The reason why it's at least 20 weeks is that's how long they've been doing a study. So they don't know that it ends, okay, after
okay.
20 weeks. So here's over the 5 months, the researchers monitor infection rates in the two groups, and these are healthcare workers. They spotted 44 potential reinfections, including 13 symptomatic among the 6,600 believed to have had COVID before, and 318 cases among the 14,000 had no evidence of past infection. So, evidently, so it gets you to about the same spot that the vaccine does. Maddie, you are correct. It is possible. Previous infection, they conclude, provides 94% protection against symptomatic reinfection and 75% protection against asymptomatic reinfection.
And that's consistent with what we're seeing in college basketball, because we're seeing kids, you know, I brought up the Michigan State example, that are testing positive again for the second time, but I think they're all asymptomatic. So really, you know, sort of who cares, but that they are testing positive for a second time, you know, 6 months later after they got it in the summer.
Right. And,
there's some reasoning behind that. You're starting to see, remember how people always said, well, you can expect after the election for the disease to start going away? One of the ways that it can go away is by changing the standards for the very, very commonly used PCR tests. And the way those work, that's an amplification test. And so what they do is generally it's done with heating, where they take your sample and then they have to keep heating it, and they go through a certain number of cycles of heating it until they find or just never find the virus. Because there are tons of people walking around with traces of it, in the world, and they never know it, and they're not contagious, and they don't have any symptoms, and it's beyond mild, it's virtually non-existent. Well, they are now starting to lower the amplification threshold. A lot of the states now are starting to order that, and by saying, hey, if we don't find it by 30 cycles, we don't find it. Even 30 is too high. But it used to be that, you know, there were states going up to 100 cycles. Well, if you test for anything, you know, if you test me for the common cold, or you test me for, you know, I don't know, any kind of viral infection, and you amplify it 100 times, unless I have just been never exposed to anything, any place, any time, you're going to find it with that many amplifications. And that may be your problem right there that you've identified with the Michigan State team, is that you know, depending on their standard for amplification is determining whether they have it or not, and in reality they didn't.
Well, some people I know I will hear this is somewhat troubling, this next paragraph. The immunity gives you a similar effect to the Pfizer vaccine, and a much better effect than the AstraZeneca vaccine, that is reassuring for people. But we still see people could transmit, so we want to strike a note of caution. But I don't understand. I mean, I guess this is not anecdotally. I mean, there's been a lot of people that have called into the show. Plus, you know, I know a lot of people. And one of my friends, his wife had it. She tested positive. She was sick. This is in April. And initially, her antibody level was fairly low. And I think she went and got another test like last month, and she didn't have any left. Right, so when I took my antibody tech or Kenny's, all of a sudden they said, "Yeah, I mean, these things are blinking. You could give blood and give plasma to people." So I don't think everybody's reaction and everybody's antibody level comes out the same, Kevin. I mean, why would it? Nothing else is the same in people. It doesn't surprise me that Maddie's right, that some, you know, in some percentage of people you're going to probably get it again. Now, whether you get it as bad as the first time, you know, I don't know. Whether, I mean, who knows? I mean, nobody really knows how bad you had it the first time and how bad you had it the second time, right? But, I mean, it sounds like a regular cold or flu. I mean, sometimes people get it a second time and it's not as virulent, and some people get it real bad. I mean, I guess I am kind of concerned about the fact that one vaccine seems that much better than the other, aren't you?
Not necessarily. It just informs whether, which one you want to get.
Do you have a choice? Do you even know? Do you even know?
Since I haven't been for a vaccine, I don't know.
I wonder, you know, anybody's
got it? That's a really good question that I don't know the answer to, if you have a choice.
Well, I mean, if they show up at your nursing home, you're just going to get it, right? You can't say, I don't want that one, but I got to come back just for you. I got to believe the one that's out there right now is the Pfizer one, because it's the first one out, right? The one we need the two doses.
Yeah, well, and the one that's probably going to be approved soon is Johnson & Johnson, which is a single-shot virus.
That'll make things a lot. Plus, I think that can be in a regular refrigerator, too, right? I think.
I don't know if it's refrigerated or lower, you know, it doesn't have the same freezing threshold, but it doesn't matter. It's easier storage, yes.
But the thing that jumps out at me in this article, If that's true, if this is true, I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't think it was at least, you know, some study. There'll be others that should confirm it, I assume. But if that's true, why are we paying virtually no attention to the people that have already had it, and all we're doing is talking about vaccines? By anybody's estimation, what do we've had? 30 million people, 40 million people in the country that have already had it? Which is just the same as them being vaccinated, right?
And yeah, I would like to know what's in the investment portfolios of the people who are making these decisions.
What have you been doing, listening to me?
On occasion. Only on occasion.
Yeah, only on occasion.
I just want to clarify that.
Lou and I were talking about that yesterday, and I hope we weren't just a couple of, we weren't doing anything right-wing, Maddie, or anything like that. We were just saying, what is the morality with these people these days? I am so apoplectic about this Janet Yellen thing, but I don't want to keep talking about it. I can't imagine somebody leaving a job and getting money from people they were supposed to regulate. That's like leaving as a police chief and going around giving speaking tours at the street gangs, right? It's the equivalent of it, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I got what you were saying yesterday. What we don't know is it payoff for how you may regulate me when you go back into government, or is it payoff for past acts?
Well, I mean, we're talking about a lady. I mean, the reason why I guess it disfrusts me so much is because we're somewhat close to the action. Now, because we had, when I say we, it's not like the three of us are at the Fed, but we know that a contributor to the show asked Janet Yellen a question at one of the news conferences regarding people front-running Fed announcements. Now, the people that can front-run those announcements are the same people we're talking about. The big firms that are in like a tick on a dog to the Fed and what comes out of there. And they get the memo first. And for the 8-10 years we've been on the show, I have documented, I mean, I can't go back and tell you the days because I try not to keep track of stuff like that, of how many nights a Fed official made an announcement in China or someplace and how the markets spun 50 or 70 or 80 spoo points when that used to be a lot. And the study from the gentleman in Hong Kong saying that how many Fed announcements seem to have been traded on before. So this was an investigation. And the Fed said, oh, no, we'll do our own investigation. And Pedro asked her at a news conference, how's that investigation going or something like that, right, Manny? And and she was visibly pissed off. I mean, the body language, you cannot. Now, here it is. 3 years later or 4 years later, she's running around getting money from the people who would have benefited from something like that. You know, I'm not here to call the lady a crook. I'm just saying it looks terrible to me. I mean, right?
And it requires a little investigation, a little curiosity, frankly, from our journalists community, which is one of the things that just drives me nuts about them is they're so selectively curious.
Well, Pedro got bounced, so that's why they're not asking her. Pedro got tossed for asking that question.
Because what you do is, you know, just like any place else, if you have a limited size audience, and access is important, you can punish people with lack of access.
Well, that's right. And I mean, the first day, the first news conference yesterday, the new administration, the first or second one. Do you think somebody like us is going to go in there and start lobbing, you know, fastballs down the middle questions? They're going to be lobbing pitches in, right? Lobbing fastballs. How's that for a statement? I mean, they're not going to ask, you know, anything horrible about Biden.
I like that as a softball team name, though.
Yeah. Lobbing fastballs.
Lobbing fastballs.
That's a square circle, wouldn't you say? Anyway, what they used to say, how was your date last night? Tall, short, ugly girl, kind of cute?
every date I ever remember.
Yeah. Anyway, but the fact that no senator, even on the Republican side, says, hey, what's going on here? I mean, are they really all in Local 12, the whole gang out there?
Yeah, they're all in the club.
Well, how do you get
it's a country club, and they all get their membership, and they learn very early on that your membership is contingent on you playing some ball here with us.
But now, Kevin, it's not
100% of them. There are people that go and rock the boat, and you know, as you documented before, and in some cases they don't last very long, and so on. But it just seems like everybody gets co-opted eventually, and you know, it's not the home for courage.
What do you suppose? And many of these guys that come into the place are pretty much your age, the ones that I've met. Both when I was in the, you know, the SIBO thing, I haven't met the people I see on TV, but between, you know, the Meet the Press stuff with the new congressman and the ones that I've met when I was in Washington, I probably met 20 of them, and I always ended up talking to the youngest guys. Nobody even knew who they were, because nobody knew who I was. So it was a great match. They were guys, literally, man, they were guys just like you. They're in their 30s. They're representatives. They did something in their district. They come from a small town. Either they were a sheriff or a policeman that was considered pretty good or something. And the guy or lady gets in there. I mean, she was either the head of this or that, and people thought she did a good job, and she campaigned hard, she's in. So these are real American people. People that you wouldn't mind at all running something. But now there's a big turnover, as I learned when I went to the AIPAC, the Israeli thing. I was a guest. Where they talk about the turnover after two or three terms is tremendous in the House. So there must be some sort of a boundary line, individual or indivisible boundary line, where in order to get to the next step, the committee chairmanships are really being thought of, you must have to be favored by somebody, and that's somebody who's... There's got to be a line there where you start taking this cash, or you start being influenced, or something. You don't get to the next level without doing something. And I honestly don't know what the something is. But clearly some group of these people that I think mostly are all talented and we don't mind being there are turned away. And the turnover in the House, despite what everybody in a saloon or a coffee shop might tell you, their turnover is actually really high. Everybody thinks, well, nobody ever loses any turnover. No, it's not high for some people, but it's really high for everybody else. And I cannot put my finger, Kevin, on what's going on here. And I feel like I'm a, you know, a babe in the woods. I have no idea. And I wish I did. And I don't have anybody who can explain it to me, Lucy. I mean, something happens somewhere along the line. I don't know what the something is. The Senate's different. Those guys, you get in the Senate, that's a much tougher club to get into. And I suspect those guys are in from the get-go at the Senate, I mean, these days. But
well, I expect that we find that the House wears people out. Because of two-year terms, you're running for re-election the day you get sworn in the first time.
Well, plus, if you're straight, if you're straight, you do me a favor, find out how much they make in the House. Because when I was your age, the guys made like 30 grand or something, or 40 grand. I think it's probably 150 now, something like that in the House. I could be dated on that one, too. But you get in there, and all of a sudden, all the guys, assuming you went to law school, probably the guys you went to law school with by age 35.
174,000.
Okay, so I was off some. The Senate makes, what, 250?
No, it says the compensation for most senators, representatives, delegates, and the resident commissioner is 174,000.
So senators don't make more.
These levels have remained unchanged since 2009.
The guys in the House used to make a lot less than the Senate. I'm saying like in the 80s, I think. Anyway, if all of a sudden if that's you, Matty, and you need a place in Washington, unless you're going to be like the goofball from Wisconsin that basically slept in his office, you need a place there. You got a family here. To travel back and forth is, I think your campaign money can pay for the travel. I'm not positive on that, but basically you got two houses, two places to live, and it used to be a lot less. It used to be like 25 or 30, like in the 70s, and it's really. You didn't keep up with your pals who went to law school and earned a decent law firm. It's not. If you're the last guy on the bench of 435 people, you really have to wonder if you're accomplishing anything. At the end of two or three terms, which seems like a lot, but it's only 6 years, and 6 years is not very long in government. All of a sudden, you say screw this, and you're out. Yet somewhere the guys that hang in there and all of a sudden become these committee chairs are all bazillionaires, or most of them are. So, I mean, I wish I could put my finger on when you cross the Rubicon, as they say, Kevin, and get into the other side. Because there is another side, it appears.
Yeah, and I don't know if that means somebody decides you know, somebody powerful decides that they like you, I don't, you know, or powerful people decide that they like you, or, you know, I don't know how that works, but it would be real interesting to take a good long look at how, at what happens with the Senate, or with the Congress, just Congress, I forget Senate for the time being, but just with the Congress, the people who last more than a couple of terms, what's the deal with them? Do you go from I don't do more than two terms to I do 32 terms, you know, with nothing in between?
That seems like we're getting.
You know, I'd love to see the distribution of that.
Well, somewhere along the line, and I don't know what the penalty is, and it really does go back to the judge that said about pornography. I can't define it, but I know it when I see it. I mean, somewhere along the line, if Matty Weber is in charge of the communications committee, and the next day I find out that his lovely bride is on the board of Netflix, I got a problem. But I don't know that I can write a law that says his wife can't be on a board. But I also know that it stinks.
Right, because we wouldn't want policy that says one spouse, you know, I don't care if it's wife or husband, right?
Pelosi's husband,
can't have success because the other is successful in whatever the endeavor is.
But there needs to be, you can't have Phil Graham pushing a law on who gets regulated when Wendy is on the Enron board. To me, that absolutely stinks, and yet I don't know if I can, all kinds of, you know, the Civil Liberties Union will be all over me. But you know what? That sucks. Unless they both hate each other. And don't even talk or something.
Well, how long have they been married? Maybe they do hate each other.
Maybe they do. But
you know, it just takes time. That's all.
The fact that that Pelosi's husband, certainly she doesn't recuse herself from any bill that involves his doings, right?
Correct.
So, I mean, I guess where do you cross the line here? And yet, there's no way I can say, gee, if Matty Weber is his wife can't be successful. But then you're going to get this. Plus, nobody in today's world would say, gee, Jill only got that board membership because Maddie's a senator. You can't go out and accuse people of that, especially if you're an old white guy and you're talking about a female now. Yet, she wouldn't have got the damn job if he wasn't the senator. And everybody knows that. I mean, you would think. I mean, I don't know. It just, somewhere along the line, it starts to go really sour. And like I said, I can't put my finger. SP futures up down 28. NASDAQ futures down 78. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Sparks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Maybe, you know, somebody can come in and put some blocks on my computer. You don't need to put porn blocks. I don't need that. But I just looked here on my U.S. debt clock. You gotta get me off this page. That now 2000, even for a guy like you, wasn't that long ago, was it?
No, the 21 years ago.
The budget or the thing, whatever it is, the proposal, the $1.9 trillion thing from Biden, where he's going to put, you know, millions and millions of dollars towards, well, actually billions towards masks and so forth. You can go in any Sam's Club now and buy all the masks you want. So I don't know where that's going to, but somebody in there is going to make money on masks. That is $200 billion more than the total federal spending in the year 2000. Just in a way of knowledge about where these numbers are, because it's really hard for anybody. Well, it's hard for me to even understand what trillions of dollars are. I don't. But all I know is when you look at something like that, this bill, we're gonna run off the printing press for more than the government spent in the entire year of 2000. That is frightening to me. But I guess they aren't asking us. All right, S&P futures down 29.50. Nasdaq futures down 82. We've got the Dow futures down 260. We have individual stocks. IBM's earnings came out last night. The stock's down $10. That's a good trade I didn't do. I'm going to say at 8 of the last 10 earnings, IBM has kind of clunked on the earnings. But that's a big clunk, down $10. That's about like 8.5%, so that's not good. The Dow's down 257. Obviously, a big chunk of that, 70 or 80 points of it, is IBM. Elsewhere, at Boeing down $2, we've got CVX down $1.80. But there's really, we got Johnson & Johnson up in the Dow. We got Microsoft up in the Dow. That's it. We got actually CRM. What is that? That's the Walgreens, right? They're up $2. Malaysia, we've got UK down 125. That's 0.4%. Shanghai down 14.4%. Hang Seng, which has been more volatile, they've been up all week. They're down 479. That's 1.6%. Oil giant CNOOC in Hong Kong dropped more than 5%. That's one of the reasons why the Hong Kong stocks are down so much. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 117.8%. FTSE down 52.8%. Acheron down 62. That's 1.1%. Just as a review, yesterday the Dow was down 12. S&P was up 1. NASDAQ up 73. So a very flat day yesterday. Bonds, 1.08. So they're down 2 basis points. The Bund minus 0.51. Japan, guess what? Positive 0.04, where they've been for like months. Oil down $1.30. That's 2.5%. 51.83. Brent down $1.30. 54.79. Natural gas down 5 cents at 2.43. So this cold snap must be going to be the last one, Matty. RBOB down 3 cents, 151. Gold, after its big run-up the other day, kind of whack, whack, whack today, down $18, 1847. Silver down 54 cents, 2531. If silver maintains this major volatility within a range, won't break out of the range, but it's flying up and down within the range, like 2% a day, which is really kind of crazy. Copper down 7 cents, 357. A lot of information there. Matty, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We are completely quiet on the traffic front. No issues or delays or accidents to speak of in the entire Chicagoland area. So enjoy a nice quiet head into downtown if you are coming into downtown this morning. Weather today, it's going to be considerably colder than it's been, though. and will be throughout the weekend. But today being the coldest day that we've had all winter so far. Sunshine with a high of 20, wind chills in the single digits. So that's our high today. Right now it's clear and 17 degrees downtown with a wind chill of 5 above zero. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 68. Right now it's overcast and 56. In sports, it was a quiet night last night. Both the Bulls and Suns were off. They're back in action tonight. The Bulls are at the Charlotte Hornets. That's a 6 p.m. Chicago time tip-off. The Suns host the Denver Nuggets at 7 p.m. Arizona time. And both hockey teams were off as well and are back in action tonight. The Blackhawks host their rival Detroit Red Wings tonight, 7 p.m. at the United Center. Blackhawks are winless in four games. The Coyotes were off last night. They'll host the Las Vegas Golden Knights at 6 p.m. Arizona time. Lastly, college hoops, a good game down in Tempe last night that saw Arizona top Arizona State 84-82. Chief.
If you're a big backer of Bitcoin, talk about whack whack, down 17% last night, briefly dropping below 30,000. 2 weeks ago it was over 40,000, so it's 25% down in 2 weeks from the high.
By the way, we got a tweet here, and I don't know how accurate this is, but it says 80% of all debt came under the Bush, Obama, and Trump administrations.
It's got to be right.
It sounds right to me, but that would align with your 2000 stat. But our last three presidents, two of them two terms, one of them obviously the last one term, 80% of our debt.
Have you done the math for me? What year would that be?
2000 to 2020.
National debt in 2000. I have the page up here. By the way, what they did on this debt clock, which made it even worse for me, they now have the historical dates. You can go back and pick up the dates years ago. So it'll say on this day in 2000, the national debt was $5.7 trillion. And I got to believe right now, where are we, 26? So there you go, 20%, right?
Yeah.
A little more. I would guess 23 or 4, but still right in the game, which... But the interesting, well, there's a lot of interesting stuff on here. Not every single one of these is, we find out, let's see if I can get the, it's on a page here somewhere, but I can't figure out what people, the part that you see and that they put on the new one now, is where 2021 is actually on the same page, so you don't have to jump back. They have stuff that you can show what it was in 2000, and that's the part that's really, really sobering. And median income now, this is the one I look at, 35,000. I think they're wrong on this. I mean, I say this all the time. I think it's a little higher than that. I think it's like 37. But median income in 2000, I don't even have to go back to the other page, was 31. So we're up roughly, I'll be generous and say 20% in 20 years on median income. All right. And yet the median new home now is 326,000, and back then it was 161, so it's doubled. And God only knows where everything else has gone. I mean, it's just really, really bad. And that's why I really do believe that if you pop, here's another one that's sobering. Manufacturing jobs now, 12 million people, and in 2000 was 17. So it's down, you know, what is that, 30%? It's almost a third. Yeah, it's a 30%. So, I mean, you're, the inequity, if you start dropping inflation on this poor guy who's making 36 grand that was making 31 20 years ago, I mean, what are you doing to him? I mean, you might as well, there's no infrastructure on this. I mean, back it was before 2000, it was 1980, 81, when I was doing this stuff for Pullman, if you had a manufacturing job, you probably had, certainly if you were in a union, You had a cost of living adjustment. And Manny, you know anybody's got one of those now? I mean, Kevin, do you? Anymore?
Cola nowadays is only something you drink.
Well, public employees do. You have it.
We get a 3% raise at my company every year.
I'm a public employee. I don't see it.
Well, you're in the wrong kind of public employee. You're not the city of Chicago.
Yeah, I guess not. And you talk about inflation. We talk about inflation all the time. And all of the fact that it already exists, that printing money is just going to cause more, and that we have all of the inflationary pressures, and then we just signed executive orders suspending all new drilling contracts on federal land for oil and natural gas, with an eye towards the campaign promise of ending all drilling on federal land. So let's jack up oil prices while we're at it, because that'll get baked into the price of everything, because it's important. And we killed the Keystone Pipeline, which is not only going to create more expense, but it is also self-defeating, because instead we're going to have to do all that transportation with trucks, and trucks are pollute a hell of a lot more than a pipeline that was designed with the latest in green technology available for that type of an operation.
Well, the
so we're off to a roaring start here.
Well, that pipeline is has issues. It has had issues, but let me ask you this, Kevin.
Keystone has.
Well, I mean, the idea of, I think you know this, but the idea of the Keystone Pipeline, it's not like it's taking Canadian oil and bringing it to the Midwest and the front refineries here in Chicago or other places, because there are pipelines from Canada to come here. The nexus of this, I believe, is that refineries are set up, and I'm no oil engineer, but I've talked to enough people that refineries are set up to deal with certain types of oil. They're not all the same. So if you're taking heavy cruddy oil, basically there's a refinery that's set up for that, and any horizontal pipe has to be heated, or else the stuff just solidifies in there. And when we stopped importing as much oil from the Middle East, which is when in Venezuela, which I don't know if Venezuela's got their act together, what they're doing down there, but because they're off the news, I suspect it's not good. We have refineries on the Gulf Coast that have been built and designed and are running off this basically crap oil. It's heavy, it's got sand in it, that type of thing. Now, you can't just put fracking oil in there, which is much lighter. It doesn't work out so well. Well, the Canadian oil, especially from the tar sands fields, are somewhat similar to the Venezuela, Middle East, some of the Middle East oil. So you've got, in order to keep these refineries essentially working, and though the refineries that deal with that type of oil are in the south. They're not the ones in Bolingbrook here, from what I understand. There's an oil engineer here that has a better read of this than I do. Please call in. But so the idea was to get the Canadian oil down to the Gulf Coast, where the refineries are designed to handle that type of oil. Because otherwise, you'd say, why not just run that oil to Chicago? Because there's refineries here, right, Kevin? So the idea was that none of that oil really was going to be used anywhere along the way until it got to Baton Rouge or wherever all these places are. So that's why it was, and there's a couple areas that goes over the Ogallala Aquifer, which I don't know how much the thing, I mean, in today's technology, you would think that if it sprung a leak, it wouldn't be such a big leak and you couldn't fix it or turn it off in time where you polluted the entire Ogallala Aquifer. You would think that we'd be able to fix that these days. But of course, environmentalists will say you can't do that. But it also goes over some areas where are essentially Indian lands. There's some sacred. I mean, there's all kinds of issues. Now, they've worked their way through some of them, and all of a sudden, Trump says, okay, go ahead with the deal. Now, what I don't get, Kevin, and I don't know who's, you're not an attorney, but sometimes you have questions, you are pretty good on this kind of stuff. If I start this thing and I get a federal approval, you would think that even if it's Trump, the guy is president, the approval should be good for a while. And all of a sudden, I don't know where the hell these guys are, but say you built half of it. And now the next guy comes in and says, oh, I don't like that idea. Stop it. Well, who's on the hook for the half I already spent? Me? I mean.
Well, you'd have to read the contract, of course, because that's going to inform what you have. So, you know, is there, every contract has provisions to terminate with cause. So if you're in breach of the contract, what do you do? And then every one of them, well, most of them, or a well-negotiated contract is going to have termination for convenience. And the termination for convenience part of it is going to be, what if I just want to walk away? And that's what you're talking about. Now, in some cases, you know, it's certainly not going to be in the seller's boilerplate, because they don't want people to just walk away. But you have to ask for it. And, you know, you would typically see something like, I owe you 50% of the remaining term or 65% of the remaining term. I've even done some, in the past, done some really creative things where I'll give you 80% of the remaining term if I terminate a month early, but I'll only give you 30% of the remaining term if I terminate early in the contract. So that made for interesting numbers. In fact, that became a legendary contract when I went to work later for that company. They said, don't ever tell anybody about this. Too late now. But the point is, I'd have to see the contract because we're on the hook for something there.
Whatever arrangements
were made to cause this pipeline to happen, we're on the hook for something. So we're going to be spending for what we don't have.
It's a matter of
how much something is going to be.
Wait, but as they used to say in the trading floor, who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket? Who's the we?
You and me, the taxpayers.
Yeah, we're not paying for it.
People of the United States of America.
We're not paying for it. The people putting the pipeline in are paying for it.
Okay, so then somebody's going to have to make them whole, because if the government comes in and unilaterally tells them they have to stop, then how are they going to make the people who have paid for construction already and who have forward contracts for that, what are they going to do? We're still going to haul them. You can't just shut them down without cause.
Without
a breach of contract, you can't just shut them down and say we're not paying you.
I
don't imagine that you'd prevail.
I'm going to stick my head in the guillotine here, and I'm going to say that Joe Biden has no intention of making these people whole. All the government did was give an approval. They didn't. They're not. The contract's not with the government.
Carl wrote in, who will be joining us here in about 20 minutes or so. He says, Keystone and drilling bans are worse than first appears. Carter destroyed civilian nuclear industry with his executive order ban on reprocessing. It took decades, but nobody will invest in what the president may destroy with the stroke of a pen. Same reason, no new refineries.
Well, I mean, I don't. If you were going to have a. Now, the people, again, my understanding would be that since the people who are going to own the pipeline and charge a fee for every gallon that runs through there, every barrel, depends on how you slice it up, those people, I believe, are buying the property, and I think they probably have condemnation where you have to sell it to them. So there's some involvement on the state level. But I'm going to say, Kevin, that they're getting the loans and they're... They're paying for it. I would be surprised if there's a big chunk of money coming from the federal government to make these people whole, because it's their pipeline.
Who's gonna get it then? You know, it's got to go somewhere. If they have not violated any of the provisions of their original approval, and the government just a new administration comes in and arbitrarily says we're shutting it down, somebody's on the hook for that.
I bet they're in court for a long time.
I certainly would be in federal court, either getting a restraining order or getting an order for them to make me whole. Well, I think that would be a strong case.
Well, that's my point. This is no way to run a government. I mean, it's not just whether I like it or don't like it. The on again, off again thing that we're seeing in the last three presidents now. I mean, Obama did a whole bunch by executive order. The first thing Trump did was reverse half of them, and I had some percentage of them. Now this guy's doing the same thing. I don't care which side you're on. That's no way to run a government, I don't think.
I agree. This is why we have a legislature, and if you can't get something through the legislature, that would fall under the category of tough, open parentheses, poop, close parentheses.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm going to say right now, there's miles and miles and miles of pipe that was bought that's sitting there, and all these people just got fired today. I think the thing's still sitting there 10 years from now.
It's about 5,000 jobs. It's going to increase the cost. It's not going to stop the oil from coming into the country, although it may slow the speed of it coming into the country. And then when you pile on top of it that you're going to stop drilling on federal lands, I think we're going to see higher oil prices and by design, on purpose, and that's going to show up in the price of everything we get, because everything has to get...
I'm going to say, Kevin, in today's world, it's like the Inglewood flyover, the railroad thing that we've needed here in Chicago for basically 30 years. They finally built it. By the time they built it, they don't need it. I'm going to say that the right now, given the fracking and all the other stuff and the increase in oil production down here, we probably don't need Canadian tar sands oil.
Probably don't. And I think the bigger impact is going to be federal land drilling, because that's about 25% of our production.
Well, and I have issues in how that comes down as well. I mean, I don't really have a, I mean, I guess for people who, I don't have a full knowledge of this, but I think most Americans, certainly most listeners, unless you're really up on this kind of stuff, would be astounded at how much land. I mean, you look out the window here in Chicago, as David would say, everything's owned by somebody, right? Except for the streets. I mean, they're owned by the city. But everything else is pretty much owned by somebody. If you look unless a forest preserve, you see a big piece of property out in the suburbs, you say, who owns it? It doesn't come back to you, well, the government owns it. But in some states, in Arizona, 95% of the land is government owned, right? So when you say,
or Nevada, or a lot of western states.
But drilling on federal property, if you're going to drill in Arizona, it's probably going to be on federal property, right? So if you're going to find gold, it's going to be on federal property. Now, whether you can get a lease, whether you can do something. But I always wondered, who exactly gets these leases? I mean, I don't know if they go out for bid, Kevin. The idea of being on federal land, if I was confident that whoever got the quote job or the drill site was A, going to be forced to clean it up when he's gone, before he leaves, and B, was going to pay a reasonable tax, or what I'll say share, to the rest of us, I don't have any confidence of that at all. I mean, especially if, a lot of the Republicans have been in bed with these oil companies forever. And I don't know that we ever got a fair price for this stuff. And the other thing I don't want to have happen is the person in Alaska, I don't want the person there paying no federal income tax, because the people who bought Alaska were the people who live in Illinois and New York, not the people who live in Alaska. I mean, why should a state that was essentially bought by the rest of the states from the Russians, why should they get all the benefit of the oil and not the people who paid for the damn place? I mean, I'm in a roll this morning, but a lot of the stuff that we've done forever, I just look at it and go, who designed this? I mean, how did this work out this way? You know?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, and a lot of the questions you just asked, we probably really just ought to have like some show preparation one of these days where we pick what we want to discuss and talk about it a little bit ahead of time and prepare
The only thing about that, Kevin, is I would say is it's all sort of the same subject. It's just his general sort of incompetence questions. Why are you doing it that way out of the government? I mean, what if this pipeline was 95% done and the guy says we're stopping? I mean, if they haven't started, and it's just started, I guess it's not the end of the world. Especially if you don't need it as much as you did 10 years ago. What if it was 80% done? Now what do you do? What do you do with it? You make a ski slope out of it? I mean, a water slide? I don't really know where the thing is right now, but I guess it's got to be started, isn't it?
Oh yeah, you know what? That would be an interesting question too. So let me, while we're talking, let me key in the words Keystone Pipeline percent complete and see what I get.
Actually, Kevin, I think the fallback position is to run a pipeline over to Vancouver or someplace and load it on ships and ship it to New Orleans. I think is the fallback position. It's not trucking it from Canada to New Orleans. But anywho,
well, it is and it isn't when you start to think about it, though, because that's a pretty long trip to New Orleans.
Oh, sure.
Or to the Gulf Shores in Texas, where all of this stuff exists, because you got to go all the way down and around.
Well, I actually think that...
Yeah, do you have to go through, like, the Panama Canal or something?
Well,
yeah,
unless you want to go all the way around.
Jesus, that's from Vancouver?
You know what it costs to put a... Man, you throw a...
How long would that take? From Vancouver all the way down through the Panama Canal and then all the way back up to New Orleans?
2 to 3 weeks.
Jesus.
I'm going to say that...
No, that's not necessarily awful, because once you start, set up a continuous flow of it, as long as much as coming in is processed on a day-in, day-out basis, that's not a big deal. But but it you know, it you start to talk about expense, you know, and so on. The pipeline is clearly the cheapest way to get it there.
I'm going to say, Matty, would you mind checking this? I'm going to say that the toll to get a tanker through the Panama Canal or the Suez Canal is approaches like $150,000 or some huge number. What it costs to go through one of those canals? I mean, it's a massive deal. A huge container ship, I know, it's like $100 a container or something. How many containers do they have on those things? 1,000?
A quick Google search. Okay, there are Panama toll calculators. So if I spent some time on this, I could probably get a good guess. But it says like the big. It's based on the size of your boat. So under a 50-foot boat, the transit toll is $800. For boats 50 to 80 feet, it goes up to $1,300, and then so on and so forth. So you could be right; it could be go way up there for a big tanker.
Thinking that it'll go up there, and that's not the expense. The expense is, getting it loaded on, unloaded, paying the tanker company to transport and all of that. Whereas once you've built the pipeline, the cost of transit is near zero. You have to recover, obviously, the initial investment. But once it's in place, then it's just going to run. It's whatever the operating cost is of continuing to pump it and so on.
Well, so now that we've had you designing and building pipelines, Kevin, we'll talk at you. Who do you like real quick Sunday?
I don't know. It depends on whether Mahomes is playing or not.
What's the word on that, Ben? I understand they went out and got a neurologist from Kansas City.
Yeah, I was looking at one article, and you and Lou were talking about this yesterday, and they referred to the to it as a very peculiar neck/ concussion injury. That's a little bit strange as a way for I'm looking at it now, CBS Sports to put it. I don't think anybody knows yet.
I'm going to guess, Kevin.
I think they'll push the envelope as much as they can, but I don't think they have any idea.
I'm going to lab one out there, not being a doctor, but listening to Lou. I'm going to say it's more like a whiplash than a concussion.
That's what it looked like to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anywho, all right, Kevin, take care of yourself.
And I'll pick against the Packers just because I don't like them. That's a total heart pick, not anything with
the only team that plays for a charity you don't like.
They're the Packers, and I usually say their name with an adjective in front of it.
All right. I understand. You'd rather have the McCaskies than the Knights of Columbus. Fall. Okay, I understand. I get it. It's all right. SP Futures down 26, NASDAQ Futures down 77. Right back, Mr. Colin Lebeck, and we're going to talk about who's going to win.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Mayor Weber on the board. S&P futures down 28 and NASDAQ futures down 86. Dow futures are still down a bunch. They're down over 200 because IBM's down almost $11. Hey, Colin, how are you, bud?
Chief, good morning. How are we doing?
Doing all right. And I would do a lot better if I have both winning teams plus both over-unders. So that's one. I get twice as much for that times two for the other. I'm up to, I can salvage my year here.
That's it. Let's do it. Couple big games, obviously, championship weekend, and interesting dynamic for me, Chief, being a greater Boston native, now living in Wisconsin. Got a lot of questions this week about, I'm obviously a Tom Brady fan, and everyone's been asking, what's your take? And it's kind of an odd situation because I will be rooting for Brady, but I don't really care about the Bucks, so it's kind of a very interesting dynamic. But couple great matchups, and we can delve into them. And I think really when you get to the conference championship game, the market's pretty efficient as far as point spreads are concerned. And these games are lined pretty tightly, but I think we'll probably have a couple angles that we can look at here.
What how much better right now on a scale of 1 to 10 is the Tampa defense versus Green Bay?
I think right now both defenses are susceptible. And actually are probably a little overrated here. When I look at the Tampa defense, they played well last week, but I go back to the Washington game a couple weeks ago against Taylor Heinicke, a guy that really has never made a start in the NFL. I think he had one start prior to that playoff game, and he went up and down the field against them. So that's one concern I have for the Tampa Bay defense. And then if we look at the Green Bay defense, they've obviously they've gotten a little bit better over the season as it's progressed, but there's definitely still some holes as far as, you know, how they're lined up, and I think Tampa Bay will be able to take advantage of that. So really we're going to look at, Chief, for the over 51 in that first game. If we look at how Green Bay's played over the last probably six or seven weeks of the season, they get up to big leads and then kind of sit back and let your other team get back in the game. So I think that's probably how this game is going to play out here. I won't be surprised if Green Bay gets up to another double-digit lead, and then Tampa can kind of come, you know, that back door is going to be open, not only for the spread, I think, but for the over 51. So that's kind of how we're going to look in that Tampa Bay-Green Bay game. I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. A couple other notes. If Tom Brady wins this game, Chief, he'll have as many conference championship wins in the NFC as Aaron Rodgers does. And Aaron Rodgers hasn't played well in the conference championship games. If we go back and look at, the previous history, he struggled in these big games, including last year against the 49ers. And then if you recall, the year that Green Bay won it, they beat your beloved Bears in the conference championship game at Soldier Field, but Aaron Rodgers struggled in that one too. So that's something to point out. And Brady is an underdog. You know, he's fared pretty well. And cold weather, and there's snow in the forecast, but we know that Brady's played in plenty of cold weather games in his career. So really a compelling matchup. And then one other thing I'd like to point out about playing the over, Chief, a lot of folks might get scared off because of potential snow in the forecast. But Green Bay is one of the only fields in the NFL that has that heated surface underneath.
Yeah, so that should be good to go.
snow doesn't really affect it that much. So,
what about the other game?
And then the other game I have, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, but I got a future on the Bills to get to the Super Bowl at 7-1.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting. They got outplayed by the Colts a couple weeks ago, but still were able to pull out a victory in Buffalo. And then last week, again, got outgained by the Ravens, but came up with some big stops in the red zone, got a pick six, and then knocked out Lamar Jackson with a concussion. And now if we look at the Chiefs, you know, we got Patrick Mahomes was battling a real serious toe injury going into last week's game. And then he obviously gets concussed. And the Chiefs are super lucky to win that game. Maddie and I, in our old show, we used to rip on Andy Reid and his clock management quite a bit when he was with the Eagles. And Patrick Mahomes has kind of negated some of those struggles. But obviously he gets knocked out and Chad Henne comes in. And they just got really lucky. But the Cleveland coach, Kevin Stefanski, really helped Andy Reid get back to this championship game. But we're going to look at the Bills here, Chief. They're getting 3 points, but you can actually buy the hook to get to 3.5. And I think that, you know, if you look at the Mahomes injury and just the Chiefs in general, I mean, the Chiefs haven't covered a game since November 1st. So
if he can't play, is it a bigger... Which would you rather have, the under or the Bills?
The Bills, absolutely.
Okay.
I think even if he does play, but getting the Bills with a hook at 3.5 points is the way to go because, again, they've just gotten stops when they've needed them and they've gotten a couple big turnovers. And the Chiefs have just been extremely lucky to get to this point.
Well, they've been getting better every week, too.
Hey, Colin, if I think Mahomes is going to play, but if he doesn't play, how far do you think the line moves?
I really think it probably just goes up to 3.5, Matty.
Okay, so just a half a point. The Mahomes.
Yeah, I think it's going to stay 3.5 either way. I think you know the Henne to obviously Mahomes injured is a lot better than Henne, but I think the odds makers have baked this into the line to give themselves some flexibility either way here.
Well, guys, so we head off to Carl. One quick comment is my gang, these guys are so old now, I don't know where the hell they even are, but of course you can't tell them, we go to the bars, but my gang at the Tripoli that used to monitor all these college sports and stuff, their big edge, they thought, Colin, was in monitoring all the injuries and playing the over-unders based on the injuries. And they would play that more than they would the teams, which is interesting.
Because I mean, the Mahomes injuries, it's just, you know, with how he played last week, I mean, if he's even close to healthy, they score at will against Seth Brownstein. I mean, they probably put up 40 points like they did last year against the Texans and the Colts in the playoffs. So I think it's pretty significant. And again, they've kind of factored that into the line. I'm sure they'll wait to see where the money flows on Sunday, but I don't see either way it's going to be at 3 or 3.5. I don't think it gets to 2.5 or 4 to Maddie's question.
All right, bud, thank you very much. We'll go over this last week or next week for actually 2 weeks. Well, we'll probably talk next week, but 2 weeks of Super Bowl. Take care of yourself.
All right, take care, guys.
Carl, you with us, bud?
I most certainly am.
Are you on the phone to your sports betting guy?
No. National Felons League doesn't do anything for me.
God. As my buddy Bill Murphy told me one day as an attorney, he goes, if they didn't have a National Football League, you'd need another jail.
Yeah, well, there's that.
I think some of that's gotten a little better, but for a while I don't know, who knows. It's just the whole idea of people making money off other people's athletic stuff. You look past a lot of things along the way, shall we say.
Well, you know, we do that with politics too, don't we?
Yeah, so except we're not exactly sure we get out of them. At least we enjoy watching the quarterback play.
Well, I think enjoyment's not quite the right word for some of these other things.
No.
You were talking about the thing with Keystone and the fracking ban and drilling ban on federal lands and stuff like this. I put that comment on Twitter and said, by the way, who remembers Jimmy Carter?
Yeah.
And the surprising thing about that is I've actually been to his presidential library. A number of years ago, I was dating somebody that really wanted to go see it, so we did that.
Where is it, by the way? Is it in Athens?
In Atlanta.
Okay.
And there is not a word about that EO.
About the what?
That executive order and him blocking civilian nuclear fuel reprocessing.
I remember when I was in high school, people said that there'd be one of these days there'd be a what do they call it, a breeder reactor, right?
Oh no, they existed, and you know, we've had his Jimmy Carter's position, and the reason he did it was he was convinced that it was impossible. Now remember, the guy was nuclear trained in the Navy.
Yeah.
Okay, which, by the way, they spend a lot of space in his library touting all of that stuff.
Well, he worked for Admiral Rickover. He was understudy of Admiral Rickover, who was the father of the nuclear sub-Navy, right?
Absolutely. And you know, very bright guy, all right? So, I mean, you know, whatever you think of his policies, the fact of the matter is he's very, very intelligent when it came to this particular sort of stuff. And but he was convinced that the civilian environment could not safely run nuclear power, and that we would eventually have catastrophically nasty accidents that would kill, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. And so he couldn't shut it down by himself. But what he did do was ban civilian fuel reprocessing, and what he claimed was that it was because of proliferation risks. Now, in truth, that is a lie, and he knew it was a lie, because the isotope mixture that comes out of civilian power reactors is wildly unsuitable for bombs. All right. So if you want to make bombs, you have to short cycle the fuel in the reactor, which of course no commercial installation wants to do, because you don't make any money when the reactor's not running.
Yeah. Well, yes, sir.
So I mean, the goals are completely different.
Just to back this, Kyle, let's back this up a second. Whoa. Let's back this. What we're talking about, Carl, more knowledgeable than me, is the spent nuclear fuel from a commercial reactor, in theory, could be shipped someplace, reprocessed, and become new fuel, correct? Isn't that in theory?
Well, it's a little more complicated.
A little more complicated, sure.
Because the fuel that's put into civilian power reactors, for a whole host of reasons that take me half an hour to explain, only has about 5% fissile material in it. That's the stuff that actually works, okay, that actually splits and makes power. The rest of it is not. The problem is that and there's very good safety reasons to do that, by the way. But the problem is that what you get out of the thing, when you get done, the amount of fuel that's left in those pins is usually about 1%, maybe a little less. And that's the point at which you start to run into stability problems, and the reactor will shut itself off because it doesn't have enough fuel to run anymore. And so then it has to be taken out and reprocessed. But when you reprocess it, in that fuel pin is a whole bunch of really nasty transuranic elements that are dangerous for hundreds of thousands of years. And this is why we have a waste issue, okay? Because you burn this stuff up, but you make a bunch of really evil stuff in the process of doing it. The only sane thing to do with that is to put it back into a new fuel pin, because it's not useful to make power, but it is, for all intents and purposes, inert. Put it back into a new fuel pin and burn it up. The problem with doing that is that a new fuel pin that has never had that stuff put into it before isn't really all that dangerous right up until you load it into the reactor and turn it on, and then it becomes instantly dangerous, just as bad as one that has reprocessed stuff in it. So there is a hazard difference from in half of the cycle. In other words, if I take a used fuel pin, it's very dangerous. A new fuel pin is not dangerous. The shipping for one is less dangerous than the other, but if I put reprocessed material in there, then the new one becomes just as dangerous as the old one.
What's
somebody who comes in contact with it.
Well, what's going to happen? What's the... Way past our lifetime, what are we going to do with the Zion plant and all the stuff that's stored on the site?
Well, that is the entire... See, what Carter did was, by banning that, he guaranteed that eventually we would have exactly the problem we have today, and we'd be forced to stop. That was his intention, was that by doing this, he would force the industry to go away, because you'd run out of so-called temporary storage space. You have nowhere to permanently put it that's safe. You have no way to reprocess it. And so it's kind of like if you had no garbage pickup and no dump, in your local municipality, eventually you'd be forced to stop eating packaged food, because what are you going to do with all the garbage bags?
Right.
Okay, so this is the thing that, that was the intention behind what he was doing.
So if I were going to have like a great 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 grandkid, he's still going to drive by Zion and say, "What the hell was that?"
Well, yeah, but the thing is that so what Carter did is destroyed billions of dollars of investment that private industry had put into these reprocessing plants. He overnight made them worth zero. And as a result, when Reagan came in, one of the first things he did in the first days of his administration was reverse that order. He threw it out.
But it was too late.
There is still today no civilian commercial reprocessing. And the reason is that nobody in their right mind is going to spend $10 billion to build another one of these things to have it destroyed again.
Well, okay, but that's... I get that. I guess I don't know the contract on this particular thing, but to me it's pretty darn dangerous that the people who are at the top of the food chain, read the president, the governor, the mayor, can just flip an approval back and forth like that. What if it was a bridge and it was half done? You halfway across the river and one guy's got to pay for it, and that eyesore stays there forever?
Yeah, that's the problem with these kinds of policy things is that people say, oh, well, this is good for the environment or whatever. Okay, fine, except you'd like to have gasoline to run your car, and you'd like to have diesel fuel to run the truck that brings your Amazon stuff to your house. You'd like to have these things, okay? And you'd also like to have some diesel fuel to run the plows and the combines and stuff on the farmland that grows all the food we eat. And yet, if you start doing this kind of thing, private industry is going to look at this and say, we're not building any more of these because we'll get halfway done, that sunk cost is gone, we're never going to get it back, and we're not doing it.
Has
happened with refineries as well, which is why we haven't built one in 40 years.
Well, a lot of the cost of the pipeline, I'm going to guess here, a lot of the cost is land acquisition, leases, rights of way,
yeah,
those kinds of things. Now, if the pipeline is creeping through wherever the hell it's going, through Dakota, and I'm the head guy in Nebraska, say, and I go get all these leases and I get all this stuff, if Biden cancels it, which he just did, can I tell all the people that I'm supposed to have rights of way and condemnation procedures if they don't want to sell it to me? Can I just say, well, piss off? I mean, they screwed me, I'm screwing you, forget it? There's not going to be you're never going to get a check? Or is there, do those guys have redress against me and I don't have redress against Biden? I mean, it's kind of, the way it is all, I mean, I'm no attorney, but this is like the dominoes that don't fall down right.
Yeah, I mean, the theory is that this kind of a thing is a Fifth Amendment taking and therefore, you're owed compensation. I mean, that's the theory behind it. The practice is a little more complicated than that, and so while there may be, I'm sure there's claims, and I'm sure there's going to be, lawsuits going to fly for the next 20 years, but the reality is that it's not that. It's the damage it does on a forward basis. When I start contemplating whether or not, and I mean, it's a very similar sort of contemplation I've made in just general industry, is that I've looked at the regulatory environment, Obamacare and things like this, and the threats to make the minimum wage $15 and whatever have you. I have multiple things in the can that I could turn around and turn into products and sell right now. The home control package that I have that runs my house is one of them, and it's an energy saver. It's extremely convenient. It's a security system. It does all sorts of wonderful things. And it is never going to see the light of day. And the reason is exactly this.
Well, we got a few minutes here. I'm going to go through an individual story because it's from a listener. Talking about a wild story. Way back in the day, I don't even know if she's alive. I heard from her in ages. But she was in Chicago when we were still on the air. Listened to the show, and she was here for a nursing convention, lives in Pennsylvania. I've never met the lady. And she became an avid listener, and once in a while send me an email. And turns out her husband was a group of a bunch of guys long before she even met the guy. In Pennsylvania, I guess a lot of people have these, I mean, if you drive through Pennsylvania, you look at these mountains and you, or hills, whatever you want to call them, you say, who the hell owns these things? Well, evidently, you know, they're up, there's nobody lives on them. I mean, but there's, these guys had a hunting lodge up on this mountain, for lack of a better term. And the the families that owned the place, and I guess owned the quote, the mountain for like a long time. So all of a sudden, one guy some outfit comes in and they say, well, we think you have, we want a frack up here. And by the way, so they signed this huge contract. They give everybody money up front. And there's, if we said, if we don't start in 4 years, you know, the land's yours again, and you can sell it to the next guy. And by the way, we got to put this road in, and we'll put the road in. And when we leave, we'll tear the road out and put the trees back, and basically left it the way we found it. And of course, the fracking wasn't doing so hot. So, but they finally, with like moments to spare, put the road in, and they have pipelines. When you're only going to be there for a little bit, they're actually above ground. They're like big hoses. And they go over. I never saw that. They're like a huge garden hose, but they're a pipeline. And so they get the thing all set, and all of a sudden the prices go down, and they end up, you know, not doing all that much. Well, what if now this thing comes through? You can't do fracking now. Does that mean these guys, they just go belly up and say, this ugly road there, it's on you. You guys better put the trees back yourself. I mean, where in this whole mess? The people get to renege on contracts, and all of a sudden, you know, these guys, nice mountain they had, now has a big road on and a bunch of pipes running across it. They're just going to leave it like that? I mean, because now the place
well,
is...
Think about this, though, generally, in the context of corporations. Corporations go out of business all the time. Your contract is only as good as the company that's behind it.
Well, you could make them put money in escrow.
Yeah, but that's not going to happen, and it never does.
Right.
Okay, so what happens to them? Yeah, they're hosed. The road's there, the pipe's there. Guess what? There's nothing in it. And why? Because the company in question is bankrupt.
So, but if they're bankrupt on their own, I guess that's the risk you take. You really didn't expect
this
that.
This is bankrupt because Joe Biden used his pen.
Well, but I'm saying it could have been somebody else. It could have been somebody else 10 years ago, but somebody comes in and just changes the law. And I guess I always felt that you were on the hook if the Congress did it. I don't know why, I just never felt that these executive orders, we have every president has to reverse the guy before him. It never even crossed my mind that you'd get screwed by something like that.
And it gets better than that too. Did you notice how when Trump reversed a bunch of Obama's executive orders, for example, DACA,
that
it was immediately blocked judge. Okay? Now, if you've ever read an executive order, right at the last part of it, it says this creates no right of action for any person or any privilege. Or blah, 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 blah. There's this boilerplate. Basically says you can't sue. All right? But all of a sudden, when Trump comes in, he reverses some of these EOs that Obama had done, which, by the way, DACA in particular was illegal under the Constitution because the Congress has plenary immigration authority. And DACA essentially went around Congress, which would not do what he wanted. All right? So that was a blatantly unconstitutional act. Trump turns around and voids it and says, oh, no. And immediately you get a judge that says, oh, you can't do that. Well, guess what? You just did the same thing in reverse with Keystone and with this fracking. You just abrogated contracts. You just abrogated existing infrastructure that's been put in and an entire regulatory scheme that was put through Congress. Have you heard any judges?
Well, not yet. But
you're not going to either. And you know why? Because you know, there's this slant in how we look at things. Something's only unconstitutional if the wrong person does it.
Well, for a while though, Carl, I've been very concerned that we seem to have, you know, 90 bazillion laws out there, and almost the president, part of his the power that he keeps getting more and more every time, is that he can't, even if he wanted to, he couldn't possibly, if he was Solomon, he couldn't take every law and give equal attention and equal enforcement across the whole thing. So the president essentially decides what he's going to enforce and not enforce. And it becomes, it's very similar to the areas in this Chicago area now that are, quote, not enforcing that you can't have an indoor restaurant. Okay.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't come down to whether it's the executive order is illegal or not, because it should have been, well, how many times has it been extended without going to the state legislature, or maybe they did or didn't, and I haven't followed it that close, but it comes down to, I'm not going to go by and buy this, stay open. I mean, we were reaching this point where every one of these executives, all these mayors, all these presidents, I mean, 40 some of them, get power way beyond what was intended, just because is what they do and don't, what they decide to emphasize versus what they don't emphasize. And I'm not so sure it was ever intended that way, but it sure landed that way.
Well, it's not legal, and it's blatantly unconstitutional. I don't care who does it. I don't care which side of the situation you're on. We have a supposed division of power, and the problem we have as a nation, and it doesn't just rest there. The same thing has happened from the federal government perspective. The federal government is not supposed to be able to tell the states that they have to allow boys in the girls' locker rooms. And yet that's another EO that was signed yesterday that they just did.
Really? I missed that one.
If you're a guy and you decide that you feel like a girl, you can now compete in girls' sports, including access to the locker rooms. And if a school does not allow it, they lose all federal funding.
I like to think I'm a regular guy. The last place I want to be is in a girls' locker room. But if I'm the only guy there, why would I want to be?
There are guys, teenage guys, that are going to black knight that, because, boy, what an opportunity, right?
To be
never mind the fact that tell me how many girls are going to win the track meets after this starts.
Well, that's that part. I mean, the competing part. Yeah, if there's much. But God, can you imagine being the one dude and 30 girls in the room? Manny, it's not a spot I want to be. I'm just saying, talk about outnumbered.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I'll take a pass on that. I'm sorry. SP Futures down 27. NASDAQ Futures down 82. Be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708 508-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howe. Mr. Carl Denninger, Mr. Matt Weber, you guys got me thinking about all the weirdest stuff here. S&P futures down 28, NASDAQ futures down 87, Dow futures down 243. Again, most of that is IBM. Big Blue, down 11 bucks. Speaking of Big Blue, the guy used to always mention that name, what's his name? Just retired after 52 years, maybe? The financier guy and,
Glenn Walter. Yeah.
I mean, I've listened to the guy for 40 years. I mean, what a great run. Anyway, over in Asia, we've got, Nikkei down 125.4%, Shanghai down 14.4%, Hang Seng down 479, 1.6%. Now, they had a big 2% move earlier in the week, so they're coming back to the roost here. One of their, CNOOC is the name of their oil giant over in Hong Kong, and they're down 5% today. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 94.7%, FTSE down 54.8%, CAC down 57, that's a full 1%. Bonds, down 2 basis points to 1.08 is a 10-year to Bund minus 0.51, Japan positive 0.04. I'm going to ask Carl when I'm done with this, has he ever seen a market go up and down as much as Japan's with the bond rate staying absolutely even? I don't think I've ever seen that. Oil down 162, that's a big move, 3%. 51.51, Brent down 154. 54.56, natural gas down 5 cents. 244, which is getting low in there. Must be this cold snap, must be our last one, according to somebody's almanac. RBOB down 4 cents, 150. Gold getting whacked too, down 28 bucks, 1837. Silver down 69. 25.16, copper down 7 cents. Oh, everything's down today. I mean, down. Whack, whack, whack. Matty, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
35 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're very quiet so far, Chief, on the area expressways. We've had no delays, accidents, or issues on the Edens or Kennedy all morning. Same for the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Southside Expressway is looking good. Same for the suburban tollways. Only crash in the area right now is in the northern suburbs. Route 53 on the northbound side just before Northwest Highway, there's a crash involving a semi that's blocking the two right lanes. So a pretty significant crash involving a semi. Traffic is getting through in the left lane only. Crews are on the scene, so expect significant delays on Route 53 on the northbound side specifically. Everything else quiet out there. Weather today, it's going to be a cold one today. Sunny skies, so it'll look nice from your window. But if you step outside, just a high of 20 with wind chills in the single digits today for our high. Right now it's clear and 17 with a wind chill of 6 above zero. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 68 today. Right now it's overcast and 57. In sports, quiet night last night. Bulls and Suns were both off. Blackhawks and Coyotes were off as well. All four teams are in action tonight, though. The Bulls are at the Charlotte Hornets at 6 p.m. The Blackhawks host the Red Wings tonight at 7 p.m. For the Phoenix teams, the Suns host the Nuggets at 7 p.m. Arizona time, while the Coyotes host the Golden Knights from Las Vegas at 6 p.m. Arizona time. Lastly, college hoops last night, a good one in Tempe. Arizona topped Arizona State on the road, 84-82. Chief.
The, Kyle, you were mentioning, regarding all this, the stuff that the new president has done, this whole idea, the unfunded mandates to me are just, how can I say this? They really suck. I mean, what if we decided now that, everybody needed a third washroom for people who can't decide whether they're men or women. I mean, what is the investment of other people to do that? I mean, how can you force every McDonald's to have a third bathroom? Without giving anybody any money to do it. I mean, even our building, there's a men's and women's on our floor. I mean, all of a sudden, where would you get the three? You got to take the kitchen? I mean, do people think any of this stuff through, or do they just roll with it?
They don't care. This is the same sort of thing that happened
you know, this happened with this COVID stuff, okay? I have an article that I'm debating if and when I'm going to post it. I've been holding it back for a while. If you take the New York's coroner data, so that's the, you know, that's kind of the authoritative thing on what killed people, right? I mean, that's what the coroners do. And you adjust the for the comorbidity list. Of course, New York City very early on came up with this deadly list of things. If you have one of these, one or more of these, you're very, you know, much more likely to get hammered by this bug. And you take the adjusted risk ratio of has one or more of these versus not has one or more of these, and then back that back into the mortality rate for people. And then you look at the CDC's risk numbers that they have for different age brackets. That correlation analysis ends up in a very ugly place. There is no risk at all associated with age. Zero.
Well,
it is all from this. I'm serious. This is the math, okay? It is all from this, these list of these bad things. And with the exception of asthma and type 1 diabetes, which is only about 5% of the total, 95% of diabetics are type 2. With the exception of those two things, all of the rest of them are caused by your personal choices.
Well, yeah, but you still don't want people dying.
That's not the point. The point is, why am I responsible? All right, think about this. If you're a flaming alcoholic, and if you keep drinking, you're going to die. Is it my responsibility to buy your next bottle of gin?
No.
Okay, how come it's my responsibility to take mitigating steps like not having my kids in school because you ate yourself into a 300-pound diabetic blob?
Well, skinny people die too.
Huh?
Skinny people die too.
Oh, they do, but I'm saying, of course they do, but I'm saying statistically. Okay, by the way, do you know how many people over the age of 75 in New York City have died without one of those diseases?
Not very many.
Five.
Yeah, not very many. But when
that's not very many. That's statistically zero.
That's a way of looking at it. And by the way, I've learned an awful lot from listening to you with those ways. I also know that if one of my contributors to the show and a good friend of mine, his group, won't say what group they are, owns a lot of nursing homes. And somebody wandered in. This disease is not easy. Somebody wandered in early on from a hospital, evidently didn't even change their hospital duds, and passed out. And they came and they would pass out the dinners at the nursing home. The dude infected 42 people in one night, and a bunch of them died. So it's not
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like they would have been alive the next 2 weeks if this guy didn't show up with this. I mean, yeah, they probably had. A, they're 80 or whatever, and they have issues, and if they didn't have the other issues and they were 25, they'd still be alive. But the fact is, they're dead. So it's not a good thing, Carl. I mean,
No, I'm not saying it is. But what I'm saying is that we knew very early on a number of things about this virus that we did absolutely nothing about. And one of them is exactly what you just brought up, which is that healthcare workers and the people in those facilities were the primary vector
Sure.
into vulnerable people. Okay, and we did nothing to block that. Instead, what we said is that you and I and everybody else who runs around every day wants to go to the bar, wants to get on a train, go to work, whatever, or your kids that want to go to school, they are responsible for mitigating the transmission to a vector that we identified in March. And it is their problem so that we can call these people heroes.
Well,
and I'm sorry, but that's wrong. And we've been doing that now for the last nine months.
The individual people, in my mind, are the term hero. Let me back up just a second. The people that I knew in my parents' generation, or you know, they're older than my parents actually, but they'd actually fought World War II. My stepfather was there, but he had to be like the youngest guy in there. He was 17 when the war ended, right? So guys were a little older than that. So, but I mean, none of those dudes. One of my uncles was a fighter pilot. Would ever consider themselves a hero because the heroes are the guys that didn't come back. Now, everybody's a hero.
I mean,
it's almost to the point where if I make a nice trade for somebody, I'm a hero. No, I'm not. I mean, come on. But what I'm saying is the people who do their job every day, I would say in some definition, whatever, be a nurse, be a bus driver, be a take care of people, you help somebody on the bus, you're nice to everybody. I don't know if the term hero applies, but you're something. You're something like really good. Okay. But whether that determines hero, but to me, some of the stuff I read about in New York, and it happened there, and I don't hope it didn't happen here. One hospital, the administrators had people working in the COVID wing for the 8 hours and then said, well, you want 2 hours extra overtime. We need you in the rest of the hospital. And without even giving everybody a change of clothes, sent them into the rest of the hospital and infected the rest of the place. I mean, some of the leadership choices by these people aren't heroes; they're idiots.
This is the sort of, we ignored the science very early on, and we're still doing it. I mean, one of the things you brought up was the stuff with the vaccines and the fact that, oh, by the way, if you're naturally infected, you have antibodies that last as long as and you get from the vaccine. The protection's just as good. The truth is, it's actually worse than that, because we have never targeted a single piece of a virus with a vaccine before, which we're doing with these newfangled mRNA things.
Right.
Okay. So we are now we are basically playing a parlor trick on your body, which has your body produce antibodies to this spike protein, which is how the virus gets into cells. Okay. That's not, however, the same thing that your body produces if you get infected. The problem with that is we don't know how safe that is over time. We don't know if there's a cross reaction that is actually enhancing another virus that comes along, or a mutation of this one. We have absolutely no clue what that's going to do, because it's not a mimic of the model that you would have. Like, for example, if you get the measles vaccine essentially makes your body think you have the measles.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That's not what these vaccines do. These vaccines think you have an invasion of spike proteins, which is not the same thing as the disease.
Well, but the flip side of that is you can't catch the disease from the shot because you're not getting the disease.
Well, that's right. But see, the thing is, I mean, there's pluses and minuses, right?
Right, always
but
is.
We've never done the testing, though, which takes decades to know that what we're doing right now is safe. There is no way to short-circuit that time. And yet, we also know there's another aspect of this, too, because we found out when they started looking at whether or not you were cross-reactive from SARS, they were very curious whether if you had SARS and you survived, whether you would be resistant to COVID. And they found that not only is the answer to that yes, but in addition, a huge percentage of the population that had never had SARS was resistant to COVID. And the hypothesis is that it's some other coronavirus that causes colds and flu that is producing that. They're not sure exactly what it is, but it's in your T cells and your beta cells, the T and B cells. We don't know if the vaccines produce that recognition, because if they don't, and they very well may not, then when those antibodies wane in 9 months or a year or whatever, you're just as susceptible as somebody who never had it, and yet someone who got infected would still have immunity.
I would agree with that. I might.
Well, we don't know the answer to the question, because it takes too long to find out. It takes a year, 2 years, 3 years to find out.
Why has there been no? I mean, this kind of frosts me as somebody who had it. There is no recognition of the people that have already had it. I'm thinking we're pushing 40 million. I don't understand why I have not gotten, since from one of the tests I took, they said, here, you got, these antibodies are very strong, blah, 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 no doubt. Why haven't I been getting a phone call? I'd be happy to give, how often can you give a pint of blood? Every month? If four people could be spun down in plaza and you can inject that in four people in a nursing home, I'd do that tomorrow. I wouldn't demand any payment. I'd just do it. It doesn't make me a hero. It makes me a regular person. Why does anybody care?
We're not really sure how well that works.
Why?
Okay.
They're doing it in Japan.
Here's an interesting thing. We're not sure how well that works. That's a somewhat involved process, but of course we know how to do it because, we've done that before, a convalescent plasma thing.
They did it in 1918 for the there was the one thing that worked for the whatever the Spanish flu.
Yeah, well, that's all we had. We didn't have anything else.
Right.
But here's the not amusing part of this is that we knew in the summertime that ivermectin worked against this disease. It was originally figured out by a medical group in Broward, and yet the NIH specifically recommended against using it, even though we had it at the point that they continued to do this back into the fall, and we started to get this big spike and people start dying again. We had two dozen studies, all of which had shown effectiveness. They didn't have one blown call on this, which is interesting because with hydroxychloroquine, they had several that said it didn't work at all. This one, no, zero. And yet it was not until, surprisingly enough, just a couple of days ago, all of a sudden the NIH drops it and goes to neutral and gives it the same status as convalescent plasma, which is we don't really know if it works or not. But okay, if you want to use it, go ahead. And then on top of that, literally yesterday, the WHO comes out and says, oh, by the way, the CT numbers that are on these tests are BS. They're producing a tremendous number of false positives. You shouldn't be doing that. You can't call somebody positive unless they are also symptomatic. So this happens on the day Biden's inaugurated.
Yeah, well, it's funny, Carl. People are on this show with me, accuse me of skipping from topic to topic and having no.
Yeah, I think we just did that, didn't we?
but the weird part is, to me, to my feeble brain, it's all sort of the same thing. It's a general stew of money behind people's science. It's the exact same topic as how people get in the House of Representatives, seemingly young, bright, and willing to do good, and 4 years later they can't wait to get the hell out of there. And there's some tripping point at which somebody is in for the long haul because they got the money behind them, and nobody knows where the money comes from. And all of a sudden, you're not your own person, but you're in there like a tick on a dog. And to me, it's the same thing. I mean, I sit there and I watch this stuff on TV, and I can't. I'm maybe because, unfortunately, and fortunately, everything has an equal and opposite reaction, right? Fortunately, I have people like you that have come in, and I've learned basically a bleep hole full of stuff from people that have been on the air and the listeners that have written in. But the flip side of that is, I watch what's going on, and I go, we can't be doing something this stupid. I mean, literally.
Well, but you know what? In this case, we didn't just screw people out of money and make somebody rich. We killed 400,000 Americans.
Well, but last week, just on simple things, right after another, I'm watching CNBC because Jan and people that are on the show, Kenny, are on there, and they get some, you know, I will say, very attractive, very well-spoken lady from Walgreens on there about, don't worry, Walgreens is going to take care of all the nursing homes, and they've got this deal, and blah, blah, blah. And all you hear about is this Walgreens and CVS deal. And the fact is, the states that are seemingly using them are way behind. It could have been 2 minutes later, they've got the governor of West Virginia in there, and everybody says that he's done the best job of anybody in the vaccines out there, and they say, well, who are you using? Well, I'm using the private pharmacies. This is one right after another, and nobody says, wait a minute, there's a connection here. We're in trouble in the states where the attractive girl has got nothing better to do but sit on TV and tell her how good of a job they're doing, and then in the other place where they're just shipping it out to regular people and they're vaccinating people. I mean, how do you not get the connection?
Well, and you know, the other thing that goes along with that too is that we've taken what used to be known as the science on this stuff. Okay, I don't care where you go with this. There's a paper that I found that was done 14 years ago on pandemic response, and it covered everything from closing businesses to shutting down borders to, you know, travel restrictions, schools, masks, the whole plethora of recommendations, and it was done by a group of guys that, I mean, this is what they do. These are medical scientists that look at this kind of thing and epidemics and things like this, and they've done it over the decades. We have done the exact opposite of every single one of those.
There was a lady, if I told you this before, that somewhere, and again, it's the one I watch most of, they get this lady on there. She only was on once that I saw on CNBC, and she comes on, and she's been, for lack of a better term, Kyle, an expert on what you were just talking about. And she's sitting in a chair, and she's nowhere near as attractive or as well-spoken as the Walgreens girl. And you can tell she'd been doing this stuff forever. She looks like she's... Anyway, she's got a stack of binders. Every one of them is probably 3-4 inches deep. It's not like a bill out of Congress, but it's pretty detailed stuff. And she goes, here's one from Eisenhower. Here's one from Kennedy. She goes, every 4 years or every 8 years, the group you're talking about updates his stuff. She goes, but really, if you go back to the one from Eisenhower, it's damn near the same as the one 4 years ago or 8 years ago or whatever under Bush. And she goes, they're all pretty much the same. Exactly what you're saying. She goes, we didn't follow any of these things. Yeah, we've been doing it for 40 years. And it's just, we didn't follow any of these. We just basically took whatever we wanted and run with it. And her point was the same as yours. She goes, we do this every 4 years. We update this stuff. And if you use the one under Eisenhower, it basically gets you to the same spot as you did the one under Bush. Cause there's only a few different things that change in there. But you're right. They didn't do any of that stuff.
Well, and here's the thing. We knew 40 years ago that masks in operating rooms, which, of course, everybody in an operating room is a trained professional, right? We knew that they didn't work. They didn't reduce infection rates. Well, if they can't work for trained medical professionals, how can they possibly work for ordinary humans that go out and have no training, have no idea what the blankety-blank they're doing, reuse the things, drop them on the table when you're eating or drinking a beer, yeah. You know, put it back on, the things hanging off your mirror in your car for crying out loud. I mean, you know, this kind of stuff, and the school closures are another one. We knew that did nothing to actually interdict anything either, and yet you still got the teachers union say, oh, no, it's too dangerous, we're not going back, sorry, too bad. How many trillions of dollars of lost economic activity are we going to get because we just screwed kids out of a full year of education? Yeah.
Well, I mean, yes, a simple question. I mean, a lot of times the intuitive stuff, intuitively, if you think the person next to you has a cold, has this thing, has God knows what, and measles, and they cough into a mask, you feel better. Is the other person. Now, that doesn't mean that nothing can get out. It doesn't mean it's 100%. But somehow or another, it intuitively makes you feel better. Yet, if masks were so good, you should just put one on your face and shut up about everybody else, because you shouldn't care if somebody else is wearing it. You just protect yourself. But that's not
where we're going. Right. But that's the thing, is we know they don't work, and that's it. But the problem you have with it is that if you believe something works and it doesn't, you are going to do more dangerous things than you otherwise would.
It's the states that have people wearing them by decree are having just as many new cases as the ones that don't. I mean,
you look at North and South Dakota, which is the poster children for this thing, because their curves are exactly identical. And North Dakota had all kinds of mandates and business closures and mask orders. South Dakota, Kristi Noem said, "Bite me," and did none of it. All right, and they have exactly identical curves. And the other thing that's interesting is that in all of the states where we got this huge secondary spike this winter, every one of them, with the exception of New York and New Jersey, which have locked down God and darn near everything, along with a couple of other places in that area, every one of them is following an 8-week FARS law style curve, including Tennessee, which went over the top about 4 weeks ago.
Well, what I don't like, you know what, Carl? I can argue with just about anybody, you know, right or the left. When you're in the middle, it's lonely, but it's a little more clear. I couldn't believe when our new president, I listened to the whiny ass Democrat who got the COVID after the Capitol fiasco and the thing got people broke in and all this stuff. Evidently, they went and they took the senators from one area and put them in a smaller room. And a few of the guys that, I guess they're Republicans, didn't wear masks, okay, and refused to put them on. So this Democrat guy, he's from Illinois, I forget his name.
Yeah, and he got it.
Oh, he got it, and he's whining a blue streak. But the thing of it is Biden picked up on that in his speech the other day. Now, I'm not saying, if you're going to say something like that, I would never... Carl, I do a podcast, for God's sake. I got guys like you on helping me out. I would never say that I was in a room with a mask on and I got COVID and I saw Carl on the other side of the room and I got it from Carl. And Carl's a bleep hole because he didn't have a mask on. First of all, if I could somehow wrestle you down and stick the thing up your nose or in your throat what you need for the test, and I found out that, yes, you're a walking COVID right. spreader, and you didn't give a crap, and you walked in, and you were happy as hell to be in the elevator. If that was true, I guess I'd have a bitch. But I don't know if any, unless I know one of those three Republicans that didn't have a mask on was the guy who was the positive party. Why would I say something like that? If I'm anybody, even me, I wouldn't say that. Unless I knew.
Well, here's the thing. There was some chick that got it right after that January 6th thing too. And she was, she was basically screaming about the same thing, right? And then about an hour after she does this, somebody comes up with video of her on the floor of the House with no mask on. And the best part of it is that Pelosi, just a couple of days prior to that, had somebody who was sick, not just tested positive, but was actively ill, that came to vote for her for Speaker and let them in the House to vote.
Well,
So there's somebody who's actually spewing virus all over the place because they're actively ill at the time.
Yeah.
And oh no, but it had to be these people didn't have masks on. Excuse me, you had a walking, virus emitter in the well of the House.
All right, Carl, we got a dash, but markets come back a little bit. S&P futures now only down 24, NASDAQ futures down 71. Carl, is IBM a buy here? It's down 10 bucks, 11 bucks. He's gone. Maddie, is it a buy?
How the hell would I know?
Oh, God. Because you listen to me.
You don't know.
I don't know either. I'm going to look at it, though. Probably not. We'll be back Monday, Stacks and Jacks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.